Well, welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, the executive director of EPIC. And joining me are my friends and colleagues, Larry Glass of the North Coast Environmental Center.
Hey, Tom.
Jen Cult of Humble Baykeeper.
Hello.
Alicia Heyman of Friends of the Yale River.
Happy to be here.
Also joining us in the studio is our special guest, Luis Villa of Latino Outdoors. Hey, Luis.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so this episode is about Latino Outdoors and the mission of Latino Outdoors, which is what?
Well, believe it or not, I haven't memorized it, but I can paraphrase.
Okay, go.
So Latino Outdoors was created to foster a stronger connection between Latinx communities and the outdoors. We center our conversation around Latinx communities, but we're not exclusive in any way, shape, or form. We welcome everyone to our outdoor programming. And also, we're here to tell the story of the Latinx experience in the outdoors and do our part to fill in some of the missing threads in the mainstream narrative of outdoor engagement.
So how did you end up at Latino Outdoors? Actually, before you get going, Luis, welcome to the studio. And you are a relatively recent addition to Humboldt. When did you get up here?
I moved to Humboldt in March of last year, 2019. We're already 2020, right? New year, new decade. So yeah, coming up on a year in a couple months.
And tell us, how did you get here? How did you end up at Latino Outdoors?
Well, prior to Latino Outdoors, I actually lived in Costa Rica for 12 years doing conservation work there with a small nonprofit called Nectandra Institute. Nectandra is a genus of tree in the cloud forest. And I'm from Los Angeles, California. But I ended up in Costa Rica because I went there in 2004 as a volunteer with Habitat for Humanity, spent 6 months doing that, found a way to stay in the country for, you know, several more years, and ended up doing that, the conservation work that I mentioned. And I got to say, you know, just as a city kid, I feel like I've always been drawn to the outdoors and to nature. But that experience, you know, in Costa Rica really awakened the biophilia in me and the biophilia in what I think is inside everyone. So I came back to the United States, gosh, coming up, 2 years ago now, and really wanted to share that experience in some capacity with other people.
And is it that biophilia that inspired you to come to Humboldt County in particular?
Yeah, I'd say in part. You know, we have a chapter, Latino Outdoors. First of all, let me mention, we are an organization that provides outdoor programming, delivers outdoor programming around the country. We have about 20 regional teams or chapters around the country, several here in California, on the East Coast, in Texas, and we have one in Humboldt County. It started out as a campus club. It's no longer that at this point. I don't think it's officially a campus club, but it still is an up-and-running team of volunteers that are delivering outdoor programming for communities here in Humboldt County. And so I came up here for, you know, to be closer to that a little bit. We have some developing partnerships that we're doing here, and so I'd really like to foster that from a close range.
So what kind of things do you do when you say outdoor programming? Does that mean hikes? Does it mean other, like, restoration projects, or what does it entail?
A little bit of everything. One of the things that is really important to us, given our volunteer-powered model, is to allow our volunteers a lot of leeway in designing and delivering that programming. You know, what we celebrate and encourage what interests them. But I can give you, you know, some numbers. You know, I'd say the bulk of our programming, maybe 65-70% of what happens outdoors are day hikes. Day hikes, family-friendly day hikes, nothing too strenuous, moderate. And we also do some backpacking, some camping, family camping. We've done some kayaking here on Humboldt Bay, and stewardship events as well, stewardship-related programming. Last year, 2019, one out of every eight outings by Latino Outdoors involved some sort of a stewardship component, and we had 190 outings nationwide.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Are there specific ways you're looking to expand, like areas of the, you know, region that you want to get into that you haven't been to before? Or,
yeah, that's a good question, Alicia. We do that organically. So we are, you know, in spite of our footprint online, we're on social media, a lot of our storytelling, which is a big part of what we do, is share that experience, right? The Latinx experience outdoors through our digital storytelling really gives people the impression that we're a lot larger than we are. You know, I'm one of two full-time staff. So we have to be very careful about expanding. And so we do it in a very intentional way. We have a way for people who are interested in becoming a Latino Outdoors volunteer to get in touch with us, complete an application, a volunteer application, and really share with us their interest and their motivation for doing, for being interested in becoming a volunteer. And we're very, yeah, like I said, we're very careful with not opening the floodgates necessarily. We'd love to be able to welcome more people, but again, we also have capacity constraints. So we do it in a way that is not such a heavy lift for staff, because there is an onboarding process, orientation, training. And so that means bringing on people in existing regions. That's the easiest thing for us. And then if somebody reaches out to us from a location in the country where we don't have a presence yet, then we start slowly. So maybe we'll invite them to contribute to our blog series online. And that's very important to us, because I keep going back to this, storytelling is so important to our mission. Part of our mission is really amplifying the presence of the Latinx community in the outdoors, in conservation, in environmental education. And by having guest contributors to our blog, or contributors who eventually become official volunteers, that helps us achieve that. You know, within the Latinx community, there's also diversity, there's variety. You know, there's multi-generational variety, intergenerational variety. There are people who are not necessarily from, you know, Mexico, for example. You know, you have a lot of people who have Mexican heritage. I have Mexican heritage. But some people are from, you know, their families originated from Central America or maybe Puerto Rico. And so we have to recognize the diversity within the Latinx community as well. So there's a lot to share. And we do that through these stories.
So let's break down some of the philosophy behind Latino Outdoors. So it is, as you said, directed towards the Latinx community. Mm-hmm. Why is it important to have an organization directed towards a particular community?
It's important because, one, we have the outdoors, right? Nature, our national and state parks that hold so much potential for health and wellness for people. And they're not entirely accessible to everyone. There are socioeconomic barriers. There are cultural barriers. There are barriers related to just, you know, the generation you're a part of. You know, my parents, you know, they weren't aware of all these resources, you know, in the outdoors that were available to, for them to take my brothers and me too, you know, as we were growing up. I have four younger brothers. I'm the oldest. And had they been aware, you know, we would have engaged more. And I think that would have certainly benefited us. So it's important in that respect. And also because currently, and there's lots of groups, lots of organizations, lots of people working to change this, the mainstream narrative around who engages in outdoor recreation, environmental stewardship, conservation is a particular narrative that is not representative of the general population of the country. And so we need to change that if we're going to build a stronger, more resilient, and robust conservation constituency.
I think this is also a time for us to look in the mirror at our own organizations, right? The North Coast conservation community looks like the broader conservation community, which is largely white. We could do a better job ourselves always in trying to expand the movement. And it's not just, you know, of course, it's a question of fairness and equity. It's also a question of effectiveness, because America is a changing country. And, you know, we need to maintain conservation to be an important movement amongst all people and not just have it be a white thing. And demographically, it's not just a white thing. And actually, sure, if you look at opinion polls taken, people of color overwhelmingly are more naturally inclined to be environmentalists than white people.
In fact, I was just reading about a study from 2018 in which the Latinx community ranked themselves higher than any other community as their concern about the environment. And what's interesting is this study actually compared the perception of other demographics, you know, like, you know, what do white folks think of the Latinx community and the Asian community, and what do the Asian community, you know, all these different communities, wealthy, poor, different age groups. And every community, for the most part, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Every community
ranked themselves the highest.
Well, no, every community underestimated how much other communities were concerned about the environment, with the exception of the white community. Everyone was like, oh yeah, white people, they're concerned about the environment, but everybody else, who knows how concerned they are. But yeah, the Latinx community ranked themselves highest in terms of like what they're concerned about for the future, their interest in outdoors, which I thought was really interesting.
So yeah, I wanted to chime in here. So in my particular wing of the environmental movement, which deals a lot with pesticide abuse, we've had quite a bit of interfacing with the Latin community there, because they have received the brunt of the abuse of pesticides, because so many of them are the workers that work in toil in our fields, and they've been subject to the unregulated use of pesticides and of all forms, herbicides, insecticides, all of that. So I've always found there's a real bridge there when I meet people in the movement because of that. Then they're really interested in the other parts of the environmental movement.
Yeah. It's really important that we're recognizing, you know, this. You know, we're in California, and recently, what was it, last year, Prop 68 passed, right? And we are in a state that has a huge Latinx population and a huge Latinx voter bloc. So, you know, that speaks volumes, right? That something, a measure such as, or legislation now is such as Prop 68 that is geared towards improving the state's, you know, water protection policies and infrastructure passes, you know, in a place like this, in a state like this. But going back to what you were saying, Alicia, about the different communities and how they saw themselves, you know, in terms of stewards of the environment, I think, and I'm not going to take credit for what I'm about to say, I was listening to a podcast where Jose Gonzalez, the founder of Latino Outdoors, was discussing the difference between the conservation identity and conservation behavior or practice. And what he means by that, and what I understood, is there are communities of people that engage in conservation behavior, they just don't call it that. Right? And they don't even, you know, see themselves as conservationists, yet they engage in behavior that is akin to that. And that's not recognized, you know, in the narrative. And that's what we need to change, you know? First of all, we need to make sure that people recognize themselves as being stewards of the environment and celebrate that within themselves and about themselves. But others need to recognize and celebrate that in the people who are engaging in that behavior. Yeah.
Well, yeah, just thinking about the zero waste movement now, and you know, it's a cool thing to reuse your containers, your yogurt container. But how many poor families have been doing that?
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
You're listening to the Eco News Report. We're talking with Luis Villa of Latino Outdoors. We're talking about how to make the outdoors a more welcoming and open place for all people. So getting people out to the outdoors, what has Latino Outdoors noticed as the challenge to get folks who may not feel otherwise welcome out in these outdoor spaces, to get them out hiking in our public lands?
You know, I mean, I guess I could speak to that from a personal standpoint, and also just from what I've learned over the last almost 2 years, you know, that I've been with the organization. Again, there's just not one response to a question like that. But, you know, growing up, as I mentioned, you know, my parents didn't take my brothers and me outdoors very much. And I think one barrier was just socioeconomic or economic. You know, it was a single earner household, five boys and my mom, and she, you know, was busy raising us. So it was tough. You know, it takes a certain amount of wherewithal, you know, to get to some of these places, especially in LA, you know, where you don't have, you know, the Redwood Forest just down the street like I do here now. So that was a barrier for us. For you know, other members of the Latinx community, there may be a certain aversion to the outdoors that is a sort of, I don't know, PTSD in a way, you know, where, you know, they've toiled, you know, their whole adult life or earlier, you know, in the fields, outdoors, doing hard, you know, manual labor. And so being outdoors evokes that for them. And so there's this mental, you know, psychological barrier there that needs to be overcome. Because again, the outdoors doesn't have to represent that, and in fact offers so many wellness benefits. But we have to, you know, work with people who have that barrier. It is a perceived barrier, but it is something real nonetheless for them. Mm-hmm. And it needs to be recognized and addressed.
And white people have also deliberately created barriers to keep people from the outdoors. One of my favorite books is The Power Broker by Robert Caro, which is about Robert Moses, who designed a lot of New York State's park system. And to keep people from New York City, poor people, from utilizing the park system — these parks are out on Long Island, out on the beaches and whatnot — he deliberately made bridges into the parks that were so low that a bus couldn't pass under them. And so, you know, the only people who could get out to parks from New York City would be the folks who have private automobiles. And the folks who have private automobiles, you know,
shiesty.
Yeah, it's so shiesty. Robert Moses, very interesting man, fantastic book. If anyone needs some light leisure reading, it's about 1,000 pages biography on a guy who made parks.
The bridge structures were literal filters.
Yeah. Because he didn't want people, those types of people to utilize his park.
Well, and I think sometimes there's this deeper undercurrent of, you know, just how do you feel being exposed like that? I know my partner is biracial, and we've had a lot of discussions about, you know, trying to go out into the wilderness or even out onto the beaches around here. And he struggles with this feeling of legitimacy. Like, am I someone who is expected to be here, you know, supposed to be here? Is there going to be reactions to people seeing me out here? And, you know, I think as time goes on, it becomes easier and easier for him. But that's like something that he constantly struggles with. And, you know, addressing that is a really long-term thing.
It is. I think it's important to also understand that. So, Alicia, you were speaking to the different ways that we can engage in the outdoors and how that's unfamiliar to some communities, some people. You know, Latino Outdoors is not here to criticize, you know, the traditional or the mainstream, you know, form of engaging with the outdoors, such as, you know, going on through hikes or doing, you know, backcountry hiking and backpacking. We want this to be a two-way street. You know, we want the Latinx community to celebrate the forms in which we all engage in the outdoors and have done so traditionally. But we also want to be open to learning new ways of engaging in the outdoors. And to be able to do that successfully will mean intercommunity engagement, you know, and learning from other communities. And yeah, you know, I think that's all I want to say on that. Yeah.
So you, Latino Outdoors, are helping to break down some of these barriers to accessing the outdoors. And I know that you have some partnerships with state and national parks. Can you talk a bit about some of these partnerships that you have going?
Yeah. So, you know, one example of a partnership that we have is here in California with the California State Parks. We originated in California's Central Valley. That is where Jose Gonzalez, the founder of Latino Outdoors, grew up after immigrating from Mexico as a child. And that's where Latino Outdoors started, concurrently, you know, with the Bay Area and Los Angeles as well. And the state parks here has been very intentional about engaging with us to really expand visitorship, you know, to state park units around California. And just, you know, fairly recently, I had a wonderful meeting with Victor Belayet, who is the district superintendent here in the North Coast District of California State Parks. And, you know, he and the district here really want to partner with us, you know, to get more people to the state parks. They want to be very intentional about, they are being very intentional about that and offering, you know, the resources that they can to accomplish that. And it's a matter of doing a strategic outreach to the communities, you know, in a way that helps the communities overcome some of the barriers that we were just talking about earlier. You know, because it's not as simple as saying, you know, here are the resources for, you know, a bus to take everybody, you know, to Humboldt Redwoods State Park. It's not, you know, just because you have it, you know, you can't assume that they will come. You have to develop those relationships with the communities as well. And it involves carefully addressing some of those mental blocks or mental barriers that we were discussing earlier.
Are there local community groups or organizations that you're really excited about partnering with?
Yeah, absolutely. So the chapter here in Humboldt County started as a campus club through HSU, Humboldt State University. And so we still have volunteers on the team here locally that are Humboldt State students. So that relationship with Humboldt State and specifically with organizations within the university, such as the Latinx Center for Academic Excellence, are important to us, those relationships. And then just, you know, organizations that serve the community at large, such as there's a new nonprofit here called Cumbre Humboldt. Cumbre is the Spanish word for summit. And there's a woman named Lucy Salazar who started that. Jen, I think you know Lucy Salazar. Mm-hmm. I think you mentioned to me earlier in conversation that she's a forester
by
training.
Yes, yeah. She's a forester.
Yeah. And she's done some work with the schools, right?
Right, yeah. I believe it was Pacific Union School that she's been involved with. And so Humboldt Baykeeper first got in touch with her because we had a grant that was to do outreach to the Latinx community in particular to get Spanish-speaking people involved in our boat tours of Humboldt Bay. And so we learned the hard way that the way to engage people is not to just say, hey, come to our event. And so Jasmine Segura is our Bay Tours coordinator, and she's a Spanish translator and interpreter. So she started out, you know, developing materials in Spanish, and that didn't really work very well. And she's done an amazing job building relationships. So she introduced me to Lucy Salazar, and she's developed relationships with a lot of different community groups where we used to do these public tours of the bay. And now what we do is we have a couple public tours, but mostly what we do is group tours with specific groups that community partners. And one of them is English Express. And so Jasmine goes to English Express, which is a nonprofit English as a second language school. Most of the students there are Spanish speakers. And she goes to the classroom and talks about various issues like our mercury and fish study or whatever. And so she's built relationships with the teachers and the students there. And then we use grant funding to take a group of English Express students and their families on a tour of the Mattaquette, for example. And so Lucy is someone that we've worked with to, you know, just trying to do outreach to different groups of people, whether it be teenagers or doing classroom presentations or bay tours or hikes in coastal areas. So Lucy's organization, it's really fantastic what she's doing.
Yeah.
Maybe in a future guest for our show.
I think she'd be a great guest. And Jen, thank you for mentioning English Express, because some of Latino Outdoors' most well-attended outings here in Humboldt County have been because of the outreach that we've done through English Express. So we had a group, if I'm not mistaken, this was before my time here in the area, but that attended an outing to Jedediah Smith, you know, State Park up north. And I believe the outreach for that event was through English Express. Yeah, it was a good group.
All right. So Louise, your job is to get people outdoors. And you're a recent Humboldt transplant. So if you were to recommend a local place for someone who wants to get into the outdoors for the first time in Humboldt County, where would you tell them to go?
The community forest. The community forest, just down the street. It's accessible, you know, it's got a little playground as well for kids, you know, grassy area for people to just relax if that's what they want to do. And very, very accessible, you know, trails. Some are moderate to difficult, and others are easy. It's got, I think, a little bit of everything for everyone. Yeah.
All right. If people want to find out about Latino Outdoors more and support your work, what can they do?
Yeah, we're all online, latinooutdoors.org, and we are on social media as well, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Yeah, those are the main channels to reach us.
And I will give a plug for your Instagram. If you ever want to feel good about the world, look at Latino Outdoors' Instagram, because it's just a bunch of smiling faces out in nature, enjoying nature. And it's really wholesome, wonderful content.
Thank you so much for saying that.
It's a nice pick-me-up when you're feeling down.
Thank you. Well, that's what, you know, being in the outdoors generally does for folks, right? Is really bring a smile to your face.
All right. Well, this has been another issue of the Eco News Report. Thank you to Luis from Latino Outdoors, latinooutdoors.org, for joining us on today's show. And thank you to my fellow co-hosts as well. If you want to discuss a particular topic on the Eco News Report, shoot me an email at tom@wildcalifornia.org. And join us on this channel, same time next week, for another issue of the Eco News Report.